the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Oh, just I like love that. It.
You know, that was great. There Thank are you. Days when I wish that I was just playing music. You know, a little bit of jazz, a little bit of blues, you know. But no, that's not what we're doing today. We got a lot of blues around these parts. Welcome to a brand new week. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com, of course, on the Progressive Voices Network, and however else you may listen or watch, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. We stream video. And, it was a busy weekend, and it's starting off to be an even busier week. The weekend gave us some news, and it, you know, I've mixed feelings about it. There is a tentative deal on a gun, I don't want to say new gun laws, because they didn't come up with a law yet. In fact, what they came up with is a framework for very minor new controls. But then again, it's been decades since Congress has passed any kind of effort to get a handle on our gun epidemic. So even a baby step is good at this point. I just wish there were more, like a few instead of just one. You know, usually when babies start walking, they take a couple of steps and then they fall, and then they get up again and they take a couple more steps and they fall. And then they just sort of like try everything. I want to see some of the try everything. But so they came up with a framework. We'll go over it. In fact, I'll be going over it on television tonight because, believe it or not, I was contacted by News Nation, which is the newest streaming, actually news channel, in the streaming universe. So it's run by Dan Abrams. Now, if you're a news junkie and you used to watch MSNBC before Rachel Maddow was on there, Dan Abrams had that 9 o'clock slot before Rachel Maddow got her show. It didn't live there very long, and Dan Abrams has kicked around. For a while, he was like the main legal expert for MSNBC, and then I think he jumped to another network, maybe CNN, I don't know, because he's a lawyer. He's got a few websites, too. Mediaite is his, as is one that's centers on the law. They often link from Mediaite to it and back, and I forget what it's called, like Law and Review or something like that. Anyway, News Nation is his baby, and if you watch videos ever on Mediaite, the ads they run are for this new streaming service, News Nation, and Dan Abrams does a show at 9 Eastern weeknights. And so I got an email from his producer asking me if I would like to come on and be the progressive voice, basically saying that the deal doesn't go far enough. It's like, yeah, I can do that. So tonight, 9 p.m.-ish Eastern, you can get them. They're on like DirecTV and all the cable things. And like we have YouTube television. It's on there. But if you don't have any of those, you can still get it at newsnationnow.com. So I think I'm going to be on around 9, and that's pretty much all I know. They did say they would send a car for me to take me to a studio, but I asked if I can do it on Zoom because, you know, 9 o'clock is late for me, just so you know. So anyway, that's happening, and I'll give my thoughts on the gun legislation, but just to give you a preview and in case you're wondering what I think about it, I'm glad they got something done, but in actuality, it's not done yet. It's a framework of a deal. There's no legislation written. There's no bill written yet. The framework includes, these are the provisions in the new alleged gun deal. that this committee of 10 Democrats and 10 Republicans came up with this tentative deal. Incentives for states to implement red flag laws. Incentives? What, they're going to give them a couple extra bucks in their allowance? It seems that we needed red flag laws. Look, that's something we even got here in Florida after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Not just an incentive. We got a red flag law. We need them. Enhanced background checks for 18 to 21-year-old buyers by accessing juvenile records. That's really good because juvenile records are usually sealed. And in the case of somebody who's just turning 18, if they can't see those records, well, they need to, and this lets them. Criminalizing third-party straw purchases. Yeah, should have been done decades ago. Closing the boyfriend loophole in domestic violence cases. Okay. Funding for school mental health and telehealth. That should have just been. That doesn't deserve to be part of a gun bill. That should just be to fund our schools. Funding for school safety resources. Again, see my previous note. Clarifying federal firearm license requirements and criminalizing evasion? You mean evasion of federal firearm license requirements wasn't a criminal charge? Wasn't a crime? Well, it should have been. How about making anything that's not following the rules a crime? Anyway, see, that's not enough. It's a first step. But really, does anybody think any of these provisions, as I just mentioned, are going to prevent a single shooting? I don't know. I guess I should be happy something is getting done. Perhaps, if they can get it done. See, again, there's no bill written yet. And then look at who the 10 Republicans are. The 10 Republicans are, hold on one second. Yes, I did. Okay, 10 Republicans are John Cornyn of Texas, Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Roy Blunt of Missouri, retiring, Richard Burr of North Carolina, retiring, Rob Portman of Ohio, retiring, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, retiring. Get it? 4 out of the 10 won't be there after this term ends. Won't be there beyond January 3rd or whatever day they get sworn in. So if they don't get this done, like written and done in the next few weeks, it's not getting done. The other ones, I'm sorry. Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, really, and Mitt Romney of Utah. If I'm counting on those people to get this done, I'll wait until it's actually done. So we'll see. Mitch McConnell said he's glad the senators are continuing to make headway. Chuck Schumer released a statement saying he'd put the measure up for a vote as soon as it's ready. And Nancy Pelosi said, it's a step forward. There you go. It's a step forward. All right. So Saturday were the March for Our Lives marches around the country. Did you go to one? I didn't. I'm being honest with you. I didn't because I'm chicken. I'm chicken shit. I am worried that some crazy person is going to be out there and shoot up the place. And that's how I feel about going anywhere. And thanks to COVID, I really don't go anywhere. So I guess I'm safe in my cocoon, I suppose. Oh, Midas Lisa's here. Hi, Midas Lisa. I think she's new in the chat. All right. Sorry, I digress. So today, I don't have a guest because we had day two of the hearings of the January 6th Select Committee in the House investigating the events surrounding January 6th. And today it was short but sweet. So I've got tons of highlights. We'll share some of what went down because I know a lot of people are working during the day. It started a little late today because Bill Stepien was supposed to be one of the witnesses. And at the last minute, He canceled. They said it was a medical emergency. It turns out his wife went into labor. So I guess, you know, if ever there's an excuse, it's like, I'm having a baby. Okay, you're excused. But they still had him, some of his testimony on tape. So they started a little later than the 10 a.m. usual start time, which was okay because that gave us time to sit through the five Supreme Court opinions that were released today. I told you it was a busy day so far, right? So the Supreme Court finished hearing all its cases for this term, about a month ago, frankly. And they had at the beginning, well, as of last week, they still had 30 cases to give their opinions on. When I say their opinion, I mean their decision, but it's framed as an opinion. Just makes it go down a little easier, I guess. I don't know. So anyway, five. And I'll tell you, the cynic in me, you know, I sometimes have to put a CY in front of the Nicole and I become cynical. The cynical part of me says, you know, if the Republicans are always bitching that the Democrats might be politicizing something, you know, the Republicans are politicizing that very thing. And yes, they are politicizing the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is now a political body. It is no longer above the political fray, if it ever was. Certainly isn't now. So, that the cynic in me says, okay, you know they're going to come out with one of the biggies like Roe or the gun, the gun rights bill to take away from the attention going towards the January 6th hearings. I was happy to see when that R number showed up this morning, meaning that's the last case they're going to give an opinion on today. And there were five of them. A lot of them had to do with immigration and border and stuff like that. And frankly, honestly, they're all important, but I'm not going to get into that. We only have an hour each day, and I've learned the hard way that I cannot cover everything. So if they had gone into guns or had gone into Roe v. Wade, I promise you I'd be all over it. If it's, and I know we're all affected by these decisions, opinions, but there's only so much I can do each day. So we're not going to go there. Just know they didn't release the opinions on any of the biggies, the monster cases we're waiting on. Now, the next hearing from the House Select Committee investigating January 6th is this Wednesday. But I believe it starts at 1 p.m. instead of 10 a.m. Don't quote me on that. I will double check, but I think that's the case. But the Supreme Court on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern will announce their next group of opinion decisions. Decision opinions? Whatever. Their next group of decisions. Okay. So they still have a chance. And look, and then the hearings go into the following week. And the Supreme Court announcements of decisions or opinions will go probably through the end of the month. In fact, last year, if you remember, the biggie that we were waiting on, which I think was the Affordable Care Act, but again, don't quote me on that, came into July. They got through June, and the end of June is usually when they finish, but they had a bit of overspill into July. That could happen. We just don't know. We don't know how many they're going to announce each day, and we don't know how many days each week they're going to do it until they tell you the next day they're going to announce opinions. So, in this case, today is Monday. Hi. Tomorrow, Tuesday, is primary day, so we sort of have a day off from both the Supreme Court and the January 6th committee, but they're both back on Wednesday. Got it? Just trying to keep it straight for you. Okay, now, what did I just say? The other thing was, I'm losing my mind. It's all just too much. Okay, so we have, primary day. Duh. All right. So this week, going to the polls, Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina. I don't know that there are any really huge races in there. Because frankly, I'm not, it's just not top of mind with all the other stuff going on. But there was the primary in Alaska this weekend. Remember, Santa Claus was running. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're going to see Santa Claus in Washington, D.C., even if it is only for 3 months. When Santa came on with Howie and me a few weeks ago, it sounded like he could get it. I mean, obviously, he's got killer name recognition. But I think that a lot of people saw the name Santa Claus on the ballot and thought it was a joke. It wasn't a joke. He was really running, and his name really is Santa Claus, and he looks like Santa, too. But I digress. So the bottom line is, it's going to be Sarah Palin. I'm sorry. There is a runoff because neither she nor the second place finisher, whose name is Begich, I believe. I think that's a political family from Alaska. Neither one of them got over 50%. So there's a runoff. And again, this election is only to fill the seat, Don Young's seat, for the remainder of this term. So it's just, you know, another, what, 6 weeks, if that? And then they're on recess again. So anyway, that's what's happening there. But Sarah Palin, way out in front, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you that. Yeah. In fact, do I have... Yes, Nick Begich III placed second with 19% of the vote in this special election to fill Don Young's seat temporarily. Sarah Palin got nearly 30% of the vote. She had 32,371 votes to Nick Begich's 20,994. In third place was a guy named Al Gross. Fourth was Mary Petola, a Democrat. Fourth place, Tara Sweeney, a Republican. And wait, one, two, three, four, five. That was fifth place, sorry. And Santa was in sixth place with 4,864 votes. That's 4.5% of the vote. I knew you would be interested, so I needed to share that with you. But I hate to say it, there were 48 candidates in that race. And Sarah Palin topped it off with almost 30% of the vote. I'm afraid we're going to see Sarah Palin in Congress, not only filling out the rest of Don Young's term, but for the next term too. And here's the scary part. She's not even the scariest of all of them. I'm talking about all the candidates who are in a position to win their races. Yeah. Yeah, just let that simmer for a while. Something else that happened today, which I didn't see because I was busy watching the January 6th hearing, which we are going to start reviewing in just a moment. And that is a debate, an old school Oxford style policy debate about the state of the economy. And it was filmed, it was taped today in Boston at noon. And when I tell you who it is, you're not going to believe it. Lindsey Graham and Bernie Sanders. Now, Lindsey Graham makes my head spin. He's just certifiable. But Bernie, I'd listen to any day of the week. So they taped this today at noon. I guess it aired, perhaps. It streamed. Sorry. This is the inaugural debate of the Senate project, something launched by the Bipartisan Policy Center, the Orrin Hatch Foundation, and the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the United States Senate. So it sounds like this is a bipartisan project, maybe attempting to restore the comity that the Senate used to be known for. Doesn't exist now, but it used to be. So this is the inaugural debate put on by the Senate project. Again, the topic was the state of the economy. It was moderated by Brett Baer of Fox Not News, and it was streamed on Fox's streaming platform, News Nation. And it will be re-aired this Saturday on the Fox Not News channel. So I guess I'm going to have to record it because that's the only place we get to see it, really? Fox not news? The rest of the universe is not participating in this? Bernie Sanders, I watch him run rings around Lindsey Graham any day of the week. By the way, there are other debates of this sort coming up. A second one is scheduled in Washington next month. A third one in Utah in the fall. But I don't know. I will keep an eye out for the thing as it's posted. I'm going to write, I guess, to the Senate project, who I'd never heard of before today, and say, what up? Why only Fox? So anyway, that's happening. All right. So before I get into the coverage of today's hearing, let me do a quick plug, a quick commercial, as it were, and say that Father's Day is this Sunday. It is. And, you know, if you haven't gotten dad a gift, it could be your father, it could be your husband, it could be your friends, whatever, a father, the father of anybody you know, or even father of those four-legged creatures. You know where I'm going with this, right? I am painting pet portraits. I am doing faux stained glass. I'm making these really cool boxes now, too. Have you seen my boxes? That didn't sound right, but I'm making these beautiful boxes. I got some in the other room. Anyway, lots of great gift ideas. You can go to paintyourpets.net, or I was going to show you my video, if I can pull it up in time. Let's see, do I have it here? I should have gotten it ready before. I did make a special Father's Day one. Now, here's the thing. Father's Day is this Sunday, so I won't have time to paint the portrait for you, but you can give that father in your life a gift certificate for a custom pet portrait, or any other kind of gift. And if you give them a gift certificate, they work with me on the painting. So you see right behind me, this is my newest portrait. It's almost done. It's actually just done. It's still just drying, and then I can pack it up. But that is Lucifer and Jasmine, two kitties that Philip had painted for his daughter's birthday that I'm going to send out. You see, now Philip did it with me. So I sent him pictures along the way of the progress, and he will give the gift to his daughter for her birthday. But you can give a gift certificate as a gift, and it includes consultations with me where I send photos of the work in progress as we go along, and they get to, tell me what I got wrong so I can fix it as we go. Understand? All right. I've talked enough. Not that box. That's the wrong box.
The only one I could find.
Oh, my God. No. Just take it away. Take it away. There's one box that looks like a coffin that I've tried to paint a million different ways. And no matter what I do, it looks like a coffin. So that one, it's not worth showing. But trust me. Why can't I find this other video? That's what's bugging me. Oh, well, since I can't find the video, you're not going to see it now. Is it here? It is here. All right. Well, now I found the video. So, hold on. Now, what?
Father's Day is coming up.
No.
June 19th.
All right. Never mind. I'm not even going to do that because the video is. Okay. So this one, I'll show you this box. I just finished this last night. It's a lovely painting on a wood box. This was an old cigar box. I did the research on it, looked it up. It was not, you know, it's a Honduran cigar. And I don't even know the name of it anymore because I painted over it. But it's a lovely box. So the sides are still all wood, but the front, it's a little doggy looking out the window at the full moon. So, and this is the inside of the box. But I've got a tea box. I've got, you know, other boxes. So lovely gift ideas, should you care to give your dad a lovely handmade gift. All right. Now, I guess we should move on to the hearing. You ready? All right. So let's do this. The hearing today was to show that, one, Donald Trump knew that he lost the election, that the people around him all knew that he lost the election, and that, well, he still raised a lot of money saying that he was going to use the money for election defense because they stole it, which they didn't, and he knew they didn't. But he raised over $250 million from his supporters, ostensibly to defend the stolen election. And it was all
bullshit.
It was just all
bullshit.
It was all a lie, and he knew it was a lie. He knew it was a lie. Everyone around him knew it was a lie. The only people who were being misled were Trump supporters, were people who watched the Fox Not News channel, were the people who, I guess, he was talking to all along because he wanted their money. And boy, did he take it. Often, he stole it from them. They would do things with the fundraising apparatus that online where you would sign up and it automatically checked was the recurring box. So if you gave, for some reason, $500, it didn't just happen once. It happened every, in some cases, week. Not only month, but every week. And some people were bankrupted by it. And the Trump campaign had to refund millions of dollars. But those were only the people who realized they'd been had and taken advantage of and kept going back for more. So here's Liz Cheney again at the beginning of the session today explaining what they were, you know, doing her opening comments, telling us what we were going to see in this case.
You will hear firsthand testimony that the president's campaign advisors urged him to await the counting of votes and not to declare victory on election night. The president understood even before the election that many more Biden voters had voted by mail because President Trump ignored the advice of his campaign experts and told his supporters only to vote in person. Donald Trump knew before the election that the counting of those mail-in ballots in several states would not begin until late in the day and would not be complete for multiple days. This was expected, reported, and widely known. You will also hear testimony that President Trump rejected the advice of his campaign experts on election night and instead followed the course recommended by an apparently inebriated Rudy Giuliani to just claim he won.
And apparently inebriated.
The vote counting stop. To falsely claim everything was fraudulent. He falsely told the American people that the election was not legitimate. In his words, quote, a major fraud. Millions of Americans believed him. Second, pay attention to what Donald Trump and his legal team said repeatedly about Dominion voting machines.
Yes.
Far-flung conspiracies with a deceased Venezuelan communist allegedly pulling the strings. This was, quote, complete nonsense, as Bill Barr said.
I think he said bullshit.
President Trump's own campaign advisors, his Department of Justice, and his cybersecurity experts all told him the same thing.
All told him the same thing, right? So that's the setup for today. There's Liz Cheney on the screen. Now, I've got a lot of clips. I pulled a lot of clips today, thinking that this is all we're going to talk about. If you would like to weigh in on anything, phone lines are open, 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in, Nicole Sandler, all one word. And I'll even play requests, because chances are I have the clip you want to see. Or I'll just keep going. You know, here's one that I do want to share with you, though, because what I believe is, as bad as this whole thing was, the worst part of it, well, I hate to say the worst, it's all bad, but a part that people should be very concerned with is the grift. Grifter's going to grift. Don the con's going to con and on he cons. And here, Zoe Lofgren lays out exactly the grift.
Will demonstrate the 2020 election was not stolen. The American people elected President Joe Biden. We'll present evidence that Mr. Trump's claims of election fraud were false, that he and his closest advisors knew those claims were false, but they continued to peddle them anyway, right up until the moments before a mob of Trump supporters attacked the Capitol. We'll also show that the Trump campaign used these false claims of election fraud to raise hundreds of millions of dollars from supporters who were told their donations were for the legal fight in the courts. But the Trump campaign didn't use the money for that. Nope. The big lie was also a big ripoff. The former...
Oh, the big lie was also a big ripoff. So that's the other big part of it, showing, one, everybody around Trump knew and everybody around Trump told Trump that he lost. They drilled it into his head over and over and over again. He didn't want to hear it. In fact, let me see if I can find this clip. 21. Because this one's great. I'll tell you, once again, the best witness on this day of the hearing was Bill Barr. Yes, the former attorney general.
And while a copy was being made, he said, you know, this is absolute proof that the Dominion machines were rigged. The report means that I'm going to have a second term. And then he gave me a copy of the report. And as he talked more and more about it, I sat there flipping through the report and looking through it. And to be frank, it looked very amateurish to me. Didn't have the credentials of the people involved, but I didn't see any real qualifications. And the statements were made very conclusory-like.
Conclusory?
You know, these machines were designed to, you know, engage in fraud or something to that effect, but I didn't see any supporting information for it. And I was somewhat demoralized because I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact with, he's become detached from reality.
If
he really believes this stuff. On the other hand, you know, when I went into this and would, you know, tell him how crazy some of these allegations were, there was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
There was never any indication. Hold on. I gotta stress that, because that's why I pulled this clip. There was never any indication that Donald Trump was interested in any actual facts. Those are words just spoken by his former attorney general, the guy who was his Roy Cohn.
In what the actual facts were.
Hold on. Let me go back a little further.
There was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
And he chuckles. There was never any indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
My opinion then and my opinion now is that the election was not stolen by fraud. And I haven't seen anything since the election that changes my mind on that, including the 2000 Mules movie.
And he laughs at that. The 2000 Mules movie, that's Dinesh D'Souza, that creep, that cretin, that, that scam artist, Bill Barr, who bent over backwards to do Donald Trump's dirty work. What was a bridge too far for him? To try to steal an election. And again, because this White House, that White House, are purveyors of opposite world, what they do is they scream, they stole the election, as they were trying to steal the election. And again, the people who were most hurt here, well, the entire country was hurt. But Trump's fans, his biggest supporters who kept opening their pocketbooks and their bank accounts to this grifter, kept giving him money and he kept stealing it. And he knew all along that that he lost the election. Here, I'm going to play a few more clips from Bill Barr and a few others. In this clip, it's Bill Barr and Stepien, who, again, he's the guy whose baby is being born today, so he wasn't there in person, but they did pull clips from his deposition. Here's this clip.
And it was a little getting awkward because obviously he had lost the election and
he lost the election.
And so Cipollone said, you know, I think it's time you come over here. And so I came over to meet with the president in the Oval Office and Meadows would and Cipollone,
White House counsel, and Meadows, chief of staff.
And this is leading up to this conversation with Kushner. The president said there had been major fraud and that as soon as the facts were out, the results of the election would be reversed.
Yeah.
And he went on this for quite a while, as he's prone to do. And then he got to something that I was expecting, which is to say that apparently the Department of Justice doesn't think that it has a role of looking into these fraud claims. So I said, you know, that has to be the campaign that raises that with the state. The department doesn't take side in elections, and the department is not an extension of your legal team. And our role is to investigate fraud, and we'll look at something if it's specific, credible, and could have affected the outcome of the election. And we're doing that, and it's just not they're just not meritorious. They're not panning out. And as I walked out of the Oval Office, Jared was there with Dan Scavino, who ran the president's social media, and who I thought was a reasonable guy and believe is a reasonable guy. And I said, how long is he going to carry on?
Good
with this,
question.
Stolen
we asked
election
the same
stuff?
Question.
Where's this going to go?
Yeah.
And by that time, Meadows had caught up with me. And leaving the office and caught up to me and said that he said, look, I think that he's becoming more realistic and knows that there's a limit to how far he can take this. And then Jared said, you know, yeah, we're working on this. We're
yeah,
working
right.
on it.
They're working on it. Wow. Wow. So that's Bill Barr explaining that everyone told Trump that he lost. And he knew it. He knew it.
Before there was actually any potential of looking at evidence. And it seemed to be based
on the dynamic. Okay, so this clip is about the Red Mirage. So do you remember what the Red Mirage is? They were told ahead of time that as the votes come in, as they're being counted on election night, it's going to look really good for him, for Trump. It's going to look like he's winning, but all the votes are not in yet. And as the other votes come in, the mail-in votes, the absentee ballots, which are mail-in usually, the different way they different way they structure everything. That the way the votes are counted, that in the next day or two, in some cases even longer than that, his lead will be diminished and chances are he will not be in the lead. That was the Red Mirage. And they explained it to him that all the votes are not counted at once. They come in waves and it may look like he's winning on election night. Doesn't mean he's won the race.
Way. I mean, this happened, as far as I could tell, before there was actually any potential of looking at evidence. And it seemed to be based on the dynamic that that at the end of the evening, a lot of Democratic votes came in, which changed the vote counts in certain states. And that seemed to be the basis for this broad claim that there was major fraud. And I didn't think much of that because people had been talking for weeks and everyone understood for weeks that that was going to be what happened on election night.
Yep.
Mr. Stepien obviously could not be with us today, and it's proper for him to be with his wife as they welcome their child. But he also had discussions with the president about the Red Mirage, that is, that it would be a long night and that early votes would favor him. But lots more votes would be counted over the course of the night and the days after. So let's play clip one from our interview with Mr. Stepien.
Stepien, Bill Stepien. I'll tell you about Stepien in a minute after the clip.
I recounted back to that conversation with him. in which I said, just like I said in 2016, was going to be a long night. I told him in 2020 that, it was going to be a process again, as, you know, the early returns are going to be, you know, positive, and we're going to, you know, be watching the returns of ballots as, you know, they rolled in thereafter.
So is it fair to say you're trying to present what you thought would be a realistic picture of what might happen over the course of that night, being election night?
That night and the days that followed. Yeah, I always told the president the truth, and I think he expected that from me, and I told him it was going to be a process. It was going to be, we had to wait and see how this turned out. So I just like I did in 2016, I did the same thing in 2020.
He did the same thing in 2020. So Bill Stepien, that name sound familiar to you? You're wondering, it's like, why do I know that name? You do know that name. Think Chris Christie. Think Bridgegate. Bill Stepien was Chris Christie's campaign manager for both of his gubernatorial races. And he was knee deep or neck deep in a Bridgegate. Bill Stepien. Yes, that Bill Stepien. Chris Christie threw him under the bus. He fired him. He blamed everything having to do with Bridgegate on Bill Stepien. Though Stepien was never criminally charged in that scandal, his career was basically derailed until Donald Trump resurrected it and hired him to replace Brad Parscale as campaign manager. And this is what we get. All right, there's a lot more. Yeah, so Stepien talks like Randy Rhodes on the radio. Okay, I don't know. I look over at the comments, and that's what I see. All right, so now, then why, with everybody telling Trump he lost, why did he claim he won? Two reasons. One, this was the game plan all along. He had planned it a lot earlier, as you'll hear in just a moment. And then you'll hear that Rudy told him to do it. I kid you not. Yes. First, Zoe Lofgren.
The former president laid the groundwork for these false claims well in advance of the election. As early as April 2020, Mr. Trump claimed that the only way he could lose an election would be as a result of fraud.
Oy.
Do you know the things with bundling and all of the things that are happening with votes by mail, where thousands of votes are gathered, and I'm not going to say which party does it, but thousands of votes are gathered,
what?
And they come in and they're dumped in a location, and then all of a sudden you lose elections if you think you're going to win.
The only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged.
Oh,
remember
my God, that was August of 2020. August of
this
2020.
This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen.
September 2020.
Take a look at West Virginia. Oh,
my God.
Selling the ballots. They're being sold. They're being dumped in rivers. This is a horrible thing for our country.
This is not going to end well.
Oh, my God. And Joe Biden in the debate at least tried to
before the election
push back.
That regardless of the facts and the truth, if he lost the election, he would claim it was rigged.
Yeah, think?
Mr. Trump was right about one thing. It did not end well.
No, it did not end well. So you remember Jason Miller? You've seen him on TV a million times. I'll say one thing for him. He is stuck by Trump. I guess maybe for him, Trump's checks didn't bounce.
Who, in your observation, had too much to drink?
Rudy Giuliani. They're talking about
Mayor Giuliani.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that. What was your observation about his potential intoxication during that discussion about what the president should say when he's addressed the nation on election night?
Okay, so these are questions to Jason Miller, who was Trump's spokesman. He's in a deposition and wearing a mask. Go figure. I thought the Trumpers thought masks don't work. Just asking.
And the mayor was definitely intoxicated, but I do not
know his level of intoxication when he spoke with the president. For
the mayor was definitely intoxicated.
Discussions with
here's Rudy.
People I mentioned, Mr. Steppy and Mr. Meadows, or anyone else, about whether the president should make any sort of speech on election night.
I spoke to the president.
I think he's drunk now.
President spoke to the president several times that night.
Yeah.
There were suggestions by, I believe it was Mayor Giuliani, to go and declare victory and say that we won it outright.
It was far too early to be making any calls like that. Ballots were still being counted. Ballots were still going to be counted for days. And it was far too early to be making any proclamation like that.
I remember saying that.
This is Jason Miller again.
To the best of my memory, I was saying that we should not go and declare victory until we had a better sense of the numbers.
Okay, so these are people. It was Jason Miller, it was Bill Stepien, all saying we told him not to declare victory because there was no evidence that he won. And Jason Miller saying, I thought we should wait till we had a better grasp of the numbers. David, you want to add something?
Yes. People may or may not remember that this whole stop the steal, phony election bullshit was teed up for 2016. They had it originally for 2016.
Right.
What they didn't count on was Hillary Clinton running the worst campaign in the history of the human race and losing to them. So they kept it in reserve until they needed it in 2020.
Yes. In fact, stop the steal was a slogan that they had come up with in 2016. This was all the game plan for 4 years earlier. And then, shocker, they won, right? So, all right, moving on. I want to play this clip because we get to hear from Ivanka. Ivanka! What did Ivanka tell Daddy? Daddy, don't do it, Daddy.
What was your view at the time as to what he should or shouldn't say?
Ivanka? Come on, Vonky.
I don't know that I had a firm view as to what he should say.
As to what he should say.
In that circumstance, the results were still being counted. It was becoming clear that the race would not be called on election night.
My belief, my recommendation was to say that votes were still being counted.
Bill Stepien again.
It's too early to tell, too early to call the race, but you know, we proud of the race we ran, and we, you know, think we're in a good position, and we'll have more to say about this, you know, the next day, whenever we had something to say.
Yeah. And did anybody who was a part of that conversation disagree with your message?
Yes.
Yes.
Who is that?
The president disagreed with that.
He's the only one.
In particular words. He thought I was wrong. He told me so. And, you know, that they were going to, you know, go in a different direction.
That's Bill Stepien again.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment.
You're
to
a fraud on the American public.
We were getting
You're an
ready
embarrassment.
To win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
No, frankly, you didn't. Frankly, that's
bullshit.
That is bullshit. That's what this man does. So, all right. So, we've heard bits and pieces, right? So then they put together. This was number. Which one was this? I don't even know what number this is. But this is pulling out the big guns, I guess. All of them telling Donald Trump, you lost. Get over it.
One of the things Mark said at some point was you can't show an
This is, what's her name? Sidney Powell.
Which I found at the time to be a remarkable assertion.
What? Sidney Powell. Because, yeah?
Because you don't have to have the gun to see the body lying on the floor bleeding out with five bullet holes in it was killed by a gun.
Oh my God. So that was Sidney Powell, the so-called lawyer, who then said to a judge, well, nobody should have taken what I said seriously. Even she didn't believe her bullshit. This is Hirschman, Eric Hirschman, who is a White House lawyer.
What they were proposing, I thought was nuts.
You think?
You know, the theory was also completely nuts.
You think?
Right. I mean, it was a combination of Italians, Germans. I mean, different things have been floating around as to who was involved. I remember Hugo Chavez and a Venezuelan. She has an affidavit from somebody who says they wrote a software in and something with the Philippines. And
right?
Just all over the radar.
All over the radar.
Share, Mr. Kushner,
Jared. Here comes Jared.
Mr. Giuliani, did you ever share your perspective about him with the president?
I guess yes.
Tell me what you said.
Basically, not the approach I would take if I was you.
Oh, my God.
And how did he react? How did President Trump react when you shared that view with him?
We said, you know, I have confidence in Rudy.
I think I had conversations with probably.
This is Matt Morgan, another former Trump campaign lawyer.
As they disengaged with the campaign. The general consensus was that the law firms were not comfortable making the arguments that Rudy Giuliani was making publicly. I seem to recall that I had a similar conversation with most all of them.
I made it clear I did not agree
Bill Barr, again.
The idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. And
that it was bullshit.
You know, I didn't want to be a part of it, and that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did.
One of the reasons he decided to leave when he did. And it just goes from there. Here's more of Barr. Right here.
Even after his attorney general told him his claims of election fraud were false, President Trump continued to promote these claims.
I felt that things continued to deteriorate between the 23rd and the weekend of the 29th. And then on November 29th, he appeared on Maria Bartiromo's show, Sunday Futures, I believe it was, and he said that the department was missing in action.
Well, no, we had glitches where they moved thousands of votes from my account to Biden's account, and these are glitches. So they're not glitches,
what?
They're theft. They're fraud, absolute fraud.
And he's lying
this
through his teeth. He knows he's lying
dumps.
Here.
They call them dumps, big mess.
You're a
dumps.
Dump.
In Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and all over. How the FBI and Department of Justice, I don't know, maybe they're involved, but how people are allowed to get away from this stuff with this stuff is unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
Now, spurred by what he saw, Barr told the Associated Press on December 1st that there was no evidence of election fraud. And immediately after, Attorney General Barr's statement went public. Mr. Trump berated and he nearly fired Barr. But Barr persisted
nearly.
In telling the president that there was no evidence to support the fraud claims.
This got under my skin, but I also felt it was time for me to say something. I set up a lunch with the AP reporter, Mike Balsamo, and I told him at lunch, I made this statement that to date we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election.
We have not seen fraud on the scale that would have affected a different outcome of the election. They said it over and over and over again. And in this clip, you'll hear the former acting attorney general, Rosen, you might recognize him, and the former another former counselor, a guy named Derek Lyons, both said that Trump would not listen to facts.
Barr quit. Now, the attorney general wasn't the only person who told the president that his claims were false. Other officials and close advisors told him the same thing.
Other than try to address
that's a counterfactual.
This is Jeffrey Rosen. Bad connection.
There were instances where the president would say, people are telling me this, or I've heard this, or I saw on television, you know, this impropriety in Atlanta or Pennsylvania or something. And we were in a position to say, our people have already looked at that, and we know that you're getting bad information, that's not correct. It's been demonstrated to be incorrect from our point of view. And been debunked.
Month and a half or so after
this is Derek Lyons, the other former counsel.
At that meeting, you know, various allegations of fraud were discussed. And, you know, Eric and Pat didn't, you know, told the group, the president included, that, you know, none of those allegations had been substantiated to the point where they could be the basis for any litigation challenge to the election.
President.
Okay, so there's a round table of people, all high-level legal experts, legal people who were working for Trump, telling him, "There, you lost." And yet he kept going. He just kept going. All right, I'm gonna switch a little bit. So there was a questions about the count in Pennsylvania, right? And you might remember in Philadelphia, Trump alleged that something on the order of 8,000 dead people had voted. Just so you know, that claim is
bullshit.
And here you'll hear from a former Philadelphia City Commissioner, and I'll let him say it. You don't need to hear me say it. You need to hear him say
it. The claim that dead people were voting. In fact, Mr. Giuliani told Pennsylvania state legislators that 8,000 dead people voted in Pennsylvania. You investigated those claims of voter fraud. Can you tell us what you found?
Not only was there not evidence of 8,000 dead voters voting in Pennsylvania, there wasn't evidence of eight.
There wasn't evidence of
we
eight.
We took seriously every eight. Case that was referred to us, no matter how fantastical, no matter how absurd, and took every one of those seriously, including these.
So that, again, former Philadelphia City Commissioner Al Schmidt said, you know, Trump said there were 8,000 dead people who voted. There weren't even eight, not eight. This is a former U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Georgia telling us about some of the crap Rudy Giuliani was pushing.
The suitcase full of ballots, the alleged black suitcase that was being seen pulled from under the table, was actually an official lockbox where ballots were kept safe. We found out that there was a mistake in terms of his misunderstanding that they were done counting ballots or tallying ballots for the night. And the partisan watchers that was assigned by each of the respective parties were announced to send home. But once they realized the mistake, someone from the Secretary of State's office had indicated that, no, we're not done for the night. You need to go ahead and continue counting. So once they packed up the lockbox full of ballots, they brought back the official ballot box again and continue to tally the ballots from the lockbox. Unfortunately, during the Senate hearing, Mr. Giuliani only played a clip that showed them pulling out the official ballot box from under the table, and referring to that as a smoking gun of a fraud in Fulton County. But in actuality, in review of the entire video, it showed that that was actually an official ballot box that was kept underneath the tables. And then we saw them pack up because of the announcement that they thought they were done for the night.
Yep.
And then once the announcement was made that you should continue counting, they brought the ballot box out and they continued to count.
So,
the FBI interviewed the individuals that are depicted in the videos that purportedly were double, triple counting of the ballots, and determined that nothing irregular happened in the counting, and the allegations made by Mr. Giuliani were false.
The allegations made by Mr. Giuliani were false? Can you imagine? Oh, my God. All right, we're going to lose the Progressive Voices Network in just a moment. So, Progressive Voices, thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Gotta Laugh will be here tomorrow. I will be appearing on News Nation tonight with Dan Abrams. Now they're telling me it's going to be about 9:30 or so. And you can watch it at newsnationnow.com. All right, I'm going to keep going for a few minutes more with a few more clips. I could go for hours because I got a lot, but we'll wrap it up in a couple of minutes. I just wanted to let Progressive Voices know what was happening. All right, so do you know the name Ben Ginsburg? You should. And you're like Bill Stepien, and you're probably going, why do I know that name? Ben Ginsburg was the RNC counsel. He's the guy who really ran everything for the Republicans in the 2000 election. Yeah, he's the one who masterminded, I don't know, the Brooks Brothers. He's the one who was advising the Republican Party in the election that gave us Bush v. Gore and ultimately gave us W as president. One could say that's when it all started going to shit, but you get the idea. So this is probably the leading Republican election lawyer, Ben Ginsburg. What do you got to say, Ben? What was this?
In the normal course of things, a campaign will analyze the reports that come in.
Yeah.
Trump campaign had a couple of basic problems, however. Number one, the 2020 election was not close. In 2000, that was 537 and close.
2020.
In this election,
right,
the most narrow margin was 10,000 and something in Arizona.
A little bit of
you
difference.
You just don't make up those sorts of numbers in recounts.
No.
And when the claims of fraud and irregularities were made, you've heard very compelling testimony from Mr. Stepien, from Matt Morgan, from Alex Cannon about those claims and how they didn't believe them. And so that put the Trump campaign on sort of a process of bringing cases without the actual evidence that you have to have in which the process is designed to bring out.
Okay, then he continues.
Any instance in which a court found the Trump campaign's fraud claims to be credible?
No, there was never that instance. In all the cases that were brought, and I've looked at the more than 60 that include more than 180 counts, and no, the simple fact is that the Trump campaign did not make its case.
The Trump campaign did not make its case. That's Ben Ginsburg basically saying this was some batshit, grade A, gaslighting bullshit perpetrated on the American people. So they knew it and lied about it. And although maybe privately some of his advisors told Trump, don't do this, you lost, they stood with him publicly, as did 98%, well, more than that, actually. I'm saying 98% of Congress. The Republicans, the only ones who are standing up against him now, are Liz Cheney from Illinois. You know who I'm talking about. I'm just drawing a blank. I keep wanting to say Adam Schlesinger, but that's not it. You know who I'm talking about. The guy from Illinois. Just drawing a blank. Anyway, I'm going to play one more clip for you before I get out of here for today. And it's what they ended with today's hearing. It's how they left us. Yesterday, they ended with a compilation basically showing that, you know, Trump knew. Today, they ended with a compilation showing the grift went on. I'm going to send Lauren Mayer a song request for using The Beat Goes On, but The Grift Goes On. The Grift Goes On. The Grift Goes On.
President Trump continued to push the stolen election narrative, even though he and his allies knew that their litigation efforts, making the same claim, had failed. It's worth pointing out that litigation generally does not continue past the safe harbor date of December 14th. But the fact that this litigation went on Well, that decision makes more sense when you consider the Trump campaign's fundraising tactics.
Yep.
Because if the litigation had stopped on December 14th, there would have been no fight to defend the election and no clear path to continue to raise millions of dollars. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I'd ask for unanimous consent to include in the record a video presentation describing how President Trump used the lies he told to raise millions of dollars from the American people. These fundraising schemes were also part of the effort to disseminate the false claims of election fraud.
Without objection, so
my name is Amanda Wick, and I'm senior investigative counsel with the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. Between Election Day and January 6th, the Trump campaign sent millions of fundraising emails to Trump supporters, sometimes
millions.
As many as 25 a day. The emails claimed the, quote, left-wing mob was undermining the election, implored supporters to, quote, step up to protect the integrity of the election, and encouraged them to, quote, fight back. But as the Select Committee has demonstrated, the Trump campaign knew these claims of voter fraud were false.
Uh-oh.
Yet they continued to barrage small-dollar donors with emails, encouraging them to donate to something called the Official Election Defense Fund. The Select Committee discovered no such fund existed.
I don't believe there is actually a fund called the Election Defense Fund.
Is it fair to say the Election Defense Fund was another, as I think we've called it, a marketing tactic?
Yes.
And tell us about these funds as marketing tactics.
Just the topic matter, where money could potentially go to be, how money could potentially be used.
The claims that the election was stolen were so successful, President Trump and his allies raised $250 million, nearly $100 million in the first week after the election. On November 9th, 2020, President Trump created a separate entity called the Save America PAC.
Save America PAC.
Most of the money
PAC.
Raised went
Get
to this newly
break.
Created PAC, not to election-related litigation. The Select Committee discovered that the Save America PAC made millions of dollars of contributions to pro-Trump organizations, including $1 million to Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows' charitable foundation, $1 million to the America First Policy Institute, a conservative organization which employs several former Trump administration officials, $204,857 to the Trump Hotel Collection, and over $5 million to Event Strategies, Inc., the company that ran President Trump's January 6th rally on the Ellipse.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing.
The evidence developed by the Select Committee highlights how the Trump campaign aggressively pushed false election claims to fundraise, telling supporters it would be used to fight voter fraud that did not exist. The emails continued through January 6th, even as President Trump spoke on the Ellipse. 30 minutes after the last fundraising email was sent, the Capitol was breached.
30 minutes after the last fundraising email was sent. And that's the end of the video. And that ended today's presentation. You know, it blows my mind. There are sad people. There's a troll who was, I just kicked out of the YouTube chat room, who's using the name Jared Patterson, probably not his real name at all, who's just, you know, saying, oh, we should have stopped the sexual pedophiles and from, you know, January 6th, save the nation. You know, stop for a minute. Just listen to the evidence and stop believing the grifter in chief. Stop believing the biggest con man that has ever conned this nation. Because you're a sucker, like a big, ugly sucker. Moron is more like it. Anybody who's still believing this bullshit, I almost feel sorry for. Almost. But you know what? At this point, you deserve it. You deserve, give Trump all your money. Because why not? He's already taking it. He's lying to you about every goddamn thing. And you believe it. Wow. I don't know whether to laugh at you or really feel sorry for you. But I guess I can do both together. Unreal. Unreal. No, I don't think he was referring to Gates. Then again, you know what? I'm not watching the chat. I'm just seeing a few random comments. And if I got it wrong, then I apologize. But I'm really sick of seeing people defending this cretin. He's a con man. I'd say watch The Music Man. Great movie. Great musical. But at the end, Professor Hill is rehabilitated and the kids learn how to play the instruments. That's not the case here. Trump takes your money and laughs all the way to Mar-a-Lago and sits at the beach and laughs at you because you're stupid enough to believe him. The hearing continues on Wednesday. We'll have more. And on that note, again, thanks for listening, everyone. We had a lot of new people check out the show today. I hope you come back. You didn't get the wrath of me, but you got an idea of what we do here. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. I think Laffy will be here tomorrow, so we got a lot to talk about. It is Election Day, and it's our day off in between another hearing day. All right. On that note, thanks for listening, everybody. And I'll leave you with the news. So keep the faith. Let's hope that the committee keeps doing the great work they're doing, because they really are. And onward. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's something. 20 senators, 10 Democrats and 10 Republicans, on Sunday announced a tentative deal on some legislation in response to the mass shooting epidemic in the U.S. Well, not actual legislation yet, but a framework for a bill that would include incentives for states to implement red flag laws, enhance background checks for 18 to 21-year-old buyers by accessing juvenile records, criminalizing third-party straw purchases, closing the boyfriend loophole in domestic violence cases, funding for school mental health and telehealth, funding for school safety measures, clarifying federal firearm license requirements, and criminalizing evasion. Yeah, far from perfect and doesn't include the most basic elements that many of us want, like an assault weapons ban, but it is a step forward. Bipartisan negotiations began after more deadly mass shootings at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, and a Buffalo, New York supermarket. There are more details to work out, but this bipartisan group of senators hopes to pass a bill before June 24th. That's just 11 days away. So who's involved? Well, the 10 Republicans, the minimum number needed to pass the Senate if all Democrats are on board, are John Cornyn of Texas, Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Roy Blunt, retiring senator from Missouri, Richard Burr, retiring senator from North Carolina, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, Lindsey Graham, Rob Portman, retiring senator from Ohio, Mitt Romney, and Pat Toomey, retiring senator from Pennsylvania. Shortly after, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer released a statement saying he'd put the measure up for a vote as soon as it's ready. Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, said he is glad the senators are, quote, continuing to make headway. And Nancy Pelosi called it a step forward. Well, it is Monday, so a new week begins with a lot happening. The Supreme Court set to announce their latest batch of opinions at 10 a.m. Eastern. That's the same time that the second day of public hearings in the House Select Committee on January 6th gavels into session. Today's hearing is expected to focus on Donald Trump's dereliction of duty during the Capitol attack, and his big lie claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, and how those false claims were connected to the pro-Trump mob that attacked the Capitol on January 6th. Chairman Benny Thompson will lead the hearing today, along with Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, who will also handle some of the questioning. There will be five witnesses in two separate panels that are likely to bolster the committee's assertion that Trump had a seven-part plan to overturn the results of the 2020 election. But Monday morning, a change in plans, as the first witness who was supposed to be called, Bill Stepien, Trump's former campaign manager, released a statement saying that due to a family emergency, he is unable to testify this morning. His counsel will appear and make a statement on the record. In its advisory, the committee delayed the start of the hearings today by 30 to 45 minutes, so plan accordingly. By the way, if you were thinking the name Bill Stepien sounds familiar, well, Stepien came to national prominence as Chris Christie's two-time gubernatorial campaign manager, who was later thrown under the bus by Christie over Bridgegate. Remember Bridgegate? Well, Stepien was never criminally charged in the scandal, but he was the scapegoat until his career was resurrected by Donald Trump, who hired him to replace Brad Parscale as his campaign manager. So, scratch Stepien from today's witness list, but the other scheduled witness in the first panel should provide the necessary fireworks. Chris Steierwalt. He's the former political editor of the Fox Not News channel, who defended the network's decision to call Arizona for Biden before any other network did, and was subsequently fired by the company in January of 2021. The second panel today has three witnesses: Republican election lawyer Benjamin Ginsburg, who helped craft the Florida Republican Party recount strategy in the 2000 election between Al Gore and George W. Bush; B.J. Park, a former U.S. attorney based in Georgia, who was pressured by Trump to pursue bogus election fraud allegations in the state following the 2020 election. He resigned in January of 2021 after learning that Trump intended to fire him. And Al Schmidt, a former Republican city commissioner in Philadelphia. He was on the board that oversaw the city's elections and whom Donald Trump falsely accused of refusing, quote, to look at the mountain of corruption and dishonesty. A committee aide on Sunday said, quote, we're going to hear testimony from government officials who were the ones who looked for the fraud and about how the effort to uncover these baseless allegations bore no fruit. Simply, the fraud that they were looking for didn't exist. And after today, the next hearing will be on Wednesday, where the committee will focus on the efforts by Trump and his allies to pressure the Department of Justice into overturning the election results. Among the expected witnesses on Wednesday, former Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen, former Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue, and former head of the Office of Legal Counsel Steve Engel. In other news, tomorrow is primary day in Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina. Meanwhile, Alaskans went to the polls on Saturday to vote in a special election to fill the remainder of the term for Congressman Don Young, who died a few weeks ago. 48 candidates were vying for this four-month-long position. The race to hold that seat for the next Congress will be on November 8th. But for this temporary position, early results show former Alaska governor and 2008 Republican vice presidential nominee holding a solid lead, Sarah Palin, with 29.8% of the vote, ahead of second-place finisher Nick Begich with 19.3% of the vote. Our favorite, Santa Claus, placed sixth with 4.5% of the vote. And finally, looking for some counter-programming today? Well, Lindsey Graham and Bernie Sanders will face off in an old-school Oxford-style policy debate today in Boston at noon. They'll debate on a life-size replica of the Senate chambers. It's the inaugural debate of the Senate Project, which was launched by the Bipartisan Policy Center, the Orrin Hatch Foundation, and the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the United States Senate. It'll be moderated by Brett Baer of Fox Not News and streamed on Fox Nation. It'll re-air on Saturday on the Fox Not News channel. A second debate featuring two other senators is scheduled in Washington next month, with a third one in Utah in the fall. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.